friendship between Jesus and Paul, of course, takes us into closer to us, into the mystery of after Jesus' death. In other words, the Jesus we meet is the Jesus who's risen with the Father, etc. And that's the one Paul met. So watching Paul's love and being loved by Jesus is obviously immediately relevant, because we didn't ever know Jesus of Nazareth. Neither did Paul. Luke, friend of Paul, disciple of Paul, talks about this Damascus journey. As he was going along and approaching Damascus, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him, Paul. He fell to the ground and he heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" And he answered, "Who are you, Lord?" And the reply came, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. Get up, enter the city, and you'll be told what you are to do." The men, please note this, because it helps us see the mysterious, artistic, dramatic nature of this literature. The men who were travelling with him stood speechless because they heard the voice, but they didn't see anyone. That scene is described later in Acts chapter 22. Those who were with me saw the light, but didn't hear the voice. I don't have to stress, do I, what's happening here? So, in other words, it's necessarily bewildering. It's necessarily something we can't lock in and put in a thing and tack it anywhere. It's mysterious stuff we're dealing with. Seeing, hearing. And the third time it's mentioned, "I saw a light from heaven, brighter than the sun," says Paul in Acts, "shining around me and my companions. And when we'd all fallen to the ground," and by the way, there's no horse in the scene, we've introduced that, "but I heard a voice saying to me, 'Saul, why are you persecuting me?'" Then, and I've just made a mistake there, so how do I go back? How do I do this? I think. Yeah. A couple of texts that "I received the gospel through a revelation," apocalypse means revelation, "of Jesus Christ," says Paul in one of his letters. The other, what we've read so far, are Luke's account, dramatic account. This is Paul. "God called me through his grace and was pleased to reveal his son in me so that I might proclaim him among the Gentiles." Reveal his son in me. The way God reveals his son, you nurses and teachers and carers and pastoral assistants and, please God, one day parish priests, all of you. So when you are to, Jesus living in you is the proclamation. "Have I not seen the Lord?" says Paul. And I've got the Greek there for you and English lettering, obviously, because etymologically, horao is exactly the same English word in English as aware. They're the same word. Aware comes from the Greek horao. You can see the W and the R if you look carefully enough. So he's saying, "Have I not been aware of the Lord?" Keep the eyes out of it. Would a blind disciple have missed anything at the resurrection? Good question. I don't think so. Because it's another way of seeing. It's an awareness. Galatians, Paul's earliest letter. "Paul, an apostle, sent neither by human commission," of course he was commissioned from Antioch to go, we know that from the Acts, but that's not the key thing, and nor from human authorities. Yes, human authorities did say, Paul, would you please go with Barnabas and preach the gospel in Galatia? But the real sending is coming from somewhere else. It's Jesus the Messiah, Paul's favourite word of Jesus. Messiah meaning Christ is the Greek, and we call it Christ all the time. But keep remembering, for Paul, Christ means Messiah. That means the promised one, the anointed one, the one my grandparents told me about, the one I've been dreaming about all my life, the reason I went and was taught by Gamaliel and became a Pharisee, and I was so keen on pushing the Jewish cause all over the wherever I could, or done out of great energy, but again, lack of insight, immaturity. When he met Jesus, when he was aware of Jesus, and when he met the Christian community, the same energy flipped and a whole new beginning happened. And Paul could now see the way of Judaism really, as it was meant to do, taken to the whole world. Like Abraham, I'll make you the father of many nations. Paul at last could see how this religion that he loved, Judaism, could become universal. That's what Christianity is. Jesus the Messiah, and God the Father who raised him from the dead, and all the members of God's family are with me, writing now to the churches of Galatia. I've been crucified with Christ, says Paul. Crucified with Christ. Well, yes, he lost a lot of friends in the Jewish community for obvious reasons. And when he joined the Christian community, you know a bit about his history, I'm sure, it wasn't that comfortable. It looks like the vast majority of other Christians, they weren't up to, they couldn't, I mean, the earliest struggle in the church was, no, to become a Christian, you've got to become a Jew first, you've got to be circumcised, you've got to follow the Torah. Of course you have to, because God said it. It's all there in the Old Testament. You've got to fulfill all the requirements of the Old Testament if you're going to be a Christian. And Paul said, no, you don't. You've got to be a Scythian or a Roman or a Greek, or you've got to be yourself. All you've got to do is love. And the others didn't like that. And they went around after him saying to people, no, he's making it too easy for you. And so Paul was crucified in that sense, of course. I have been crucified. He associates his own pain and suffering with that of Jesus, who also wasn't understood. It's no longer I who live, it's Christ who lives in me. And I did this with you before, so I shan't delay on it. The life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, loving me and giving himself for me. Loving me, it's agape here, agapao, giving himself for me. I think we're something of friendship is coming in there, something of that gift of self that enabled, in this case, Paul to become who Paul always was, really. But it got deflected by education and limits and all that, and lack of... Paul became Paul, and how beautiful that is for all of us, because of the friendship of Jesus, the accompanying Jesus. Because you are sons, and I've got that little thing because this has got nothing to do with being male or female, you're sons, in other words, we're all Jesus. He is the Son, so I live no longer I, but Christ lives in me. Obviously, every woman can say that and every man can say that, please God, one day. So this is not gender stuff. Because you're sons, in other words, because you're living the life of the Son, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, crying, Abba. In the Messiah Jesus, the only, in the Messiah Jesus, or in Christ Jesus, it's usually put, in the Messiah Jesus, the only thing that counts, says Paul, is faith, believing, working through love. That's all that matters. That's what our present Pope is trying to tell us. He's getting these cardinals, not many of them, thank God, writing him these letters because dubium, you know. questioning his thing about people coming to communion, etc. And he's got enough sense not to answer them. In fact, two of the four have already died, so if you wait long enough. I don't mean that badly or anything, but because you can't enter into that. It's like Jesus trying to enter into dialogue with the Pharisees. You can't do it, won't work. So you just have to kind of suffer the pain of not being understood. But faith working through love. And this is a beautiful little passage of it may be his earliest letter, but it's very early, written year 50. And this is Paul. Where did he get this from? It's not the Paul that persecuted the church. Well, it is, but this is someone who's come, as please God we all do, and you will in this retreat, to a whole new beginning of insight, a whole new way of looking at things. That's very important. And here's Paul says to the Thessalonians, we were gentle among you like a mother. Some people I haven't read recently because I can't be bothered, I suppose. But there was a time when people were saying Paul was misogynist, male chauvinist, whatever. And anything I ever said to them was, well, for God's sake, go and read his letters, will you? I've met misogynists in my day. I hope I'm not one myself. I might be a bit, but I hope not to be. But I've never met a misogynist who likened himself so simply to a mother. I don't think that kind of fits too well. Be gentle among you, says Paul, like a mother feeding and cherishing her own children. So deeply do we care for you that we're determined to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own very selves. Isn't this key to our topic of friendship? Because you become very dear to us. Then he goes on, likening himself now to a father as well. But you remember our labour and toil, brothers and sisters. We worked day and night so that we might not burden any of you while we were proclaiming to you the gospel of God. You're our witnesses, and God also, how reverent, upright and blameless our conduct was towards you believers. As you know, we dealt with each of you like a father with his children, urging, encouraging you, pleading with you to lead a life worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. No wonder the church got going in these communities with someone as amazingly loving as Paul, and transparently to himself and to everyone who was with him, revealing Jesus, therefore revealing God. That's the key. Not just a very attractive Paul, though he is amazingly attractive and brilliant and everything else. It's because he's an icon to the community of Jesus, presence among them, and therefore of God. May the Lord make you increase and abound in love for one another and for all, just as we abound in love for you. His letter to the Corinthians, you know this scene. I've retranslated it because I think it's very important. Basically, to be honest to the Greek, in this particular passage, which you hear at nearly every wedding, love is patient, love is kind, you know that scene. Well, there's problems with that translation. All you English teachers will be with me on this. Patient is is an adjective. Love is patient means that's a quality of love. It's all very abstract. Paul only uses verbs all through this passage. And a verb is nothing like abstract. A verb is not a quality. A verb is what you do, what you see happening. It's what's going on. So somehow, translation, you'd do better if you had a go at it, but this is my best go at it. Love never stops caring, is what he's saying. Love always acts in a kind way. And then he tells all the things that love doesn't do. Love doesn't take pleasure in wrongdoing, but it rejoices in the truth. Love has beauty. Statement. Love has space enough. Think of your grandmother, your mother, hopefully, your father, I don't know, your uncle, the first religious sister that said to you, I think you've got a vocation, and you've been grateful ever since? Is everybody smiling? Whatever happened to you in your life. But think of that. Love has space enough to hold and bear everything and everyone. I haven't met many people like that, only because I'm blind, I'm sure, because I'm sure they're there. Significantly like this. Some stand out, you know. They have this. In a parish, I've seen it, you know, and usually it's women. It's more obvious too, I must say, and usually it's grandmother's age. Maybe we grow into this. But some people have got this, they've got their homes, everybody's home, they've got this incredible capacity. You might even have people in your own family like this who have such a big heart. Well, that's what this is about. Space for everybody. Love believes all things, hopes all things, endures whatever comes. Paul went through immense suffering, so did Jesus. But they didn't let that hook them so that they got all caught up in it, which I can do and you can do. And we've got to learn not to do it. We've got to learn Jesus did it. We've got to learn to love when things are hard. And Paul can write like this, even though he's constantly being persecuted himself. Love endures whatever comes, but it stays loving. Don't let me hurting you hurt you, harm you. It's my problem, really. And then there's no harm in you saying, Father, forgive me, doesn't know what he do. It does. But don't let it catch you, hook you. Life's too short and you're too beautiful and I'm too beautiful to be going on with all that reactionary stuff. Love doesn't come to an end. As God's chosen ones, holy and beloved. Look at this beautiful stuff. Clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgiving each other. Just as the Lord has forgiven you. This is deeply concerned with the nature of friendship. Though the word isn't used, you must forgive. Above all, clothe yourself with love, with agape, with God's love. But it's the love that has, friendship gives an insight into the kind of loving that we human beings are asked to do. Yes, be faithful if we can. We may fail like Peter, and when we do, but don't stop love. Don't stop being a friend. You yourselves are our letter. What a beautiful thing to say to the Corinthian community who caused him such trouble. You yourself are our letter, written on our hearts, to be known and read by all. Everybody can see how much we love you. You show that you are a letter of the Messiah, prepared by us, written not with ink. What Paul created, helped create, was the environment whereby they became lovers. Friends, not with ink, but by the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of the human heart. And now a critical text for our topic, Romans 5:8. God proves his love for us, agape, God's faithful commitment, in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. There it is. Christ didn't befriend us, the beloved disciple, because the beloved disciple was an attractive young man and Jesus could see how useful he'd be in the ministry. That's all there, but that's not what's going on. No, Paul knew he wasn't chosen because he was good or sensible or wise or loving or anything. And it amazed him. It was while we were still sinners, while Paul was on his way to do more sinning at Damascus that he was captured by love, captivated by love. We were still sinners. So God's love, God's agape, isn't conditional on our being good. It enables us to be good. It creates the environment for goodness. Friendship, as we're sharing with you this week, is, as Michelle pointed out very beautifully on the opening evening, isn't just the attraction of equals. It's a love that enables, independent of what qualities the person has, because the lover believes in them and knows that they're made in the image of God, knows how beautiful they are, and so loves them. And they come to see how beautiful they are in that love. While we were still sinners, Christ gave his life for us. And that proves God's love. Another beautiful text in, I think it's Paul's best letter, Ephesians, chapter 2, verse 9. And you're asked to believe this. We are God. Have you ever thought of yourself as God's work of art? Come on and nod and admit you have. So, we are God's work of art, created in the Messiah, Jesus. Each individual person, individual is a bad word, each person is a work of art. Some don't get a chance to even get to know that very early because parental stuff, home stuff, we know, so everything's different. We're all different. But we all still are, maybe deep down, a work of art, and it's the friend, the Christian friend, the Jesus person, like Paul in Thessalonica, who got everyone to pause and stop seeing themselves the way others have seen them or the way they've internalized what others have done, etc., etc., etc. And suddenly, in the basking in the light of Jesus, Mary of Magdala came to see who she was. Seven demons goes and a saint comes. Paul came to see who he was, and we're going on and on and on. So we're God's work of art. And if we know that about everybody, if I can't see your God's work of art, then I'm blind. Don't blame yourself. I just can't see. But hopefully there's someone in your life who befriends you, who sees that. I pray, says Paul, that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, through believing, as you are being rooted and grounded in love. I beg you, says Paul, it's a general letter written to the Gentile community before he goes to Rome and thinks he'll never see them again. I beg you, lead a life worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility, that beautiful virtue that Peter learned when Jesus gazed at him across the courtyard. While he was a sinner, he still was loved, and that just blew his mind and created the Peter we know. So it was that gaze. In all humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another in agape, love, making every effort to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Or, as he says very briefly, and gee, it's a good statement, if you've got a shower at home, don't let it get caught up in the mist, etc., but tack it on the wall somewhere where you see it every day. Paul's advice, the best advice he ever gave anybody, in so brief, do the truth in love. Do what's true. And do it as lovingly as you may. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as God in the Messiah has forgiven you. this is one of the loveliest passages of Paul to the Philippians there. If there's any appeal in the Messiah, if there's any consolation from love, any communion in the Spirit, any movements of compassion and feelings of love, make my joy complete. Paul's writing probably from Rome, awaiting death. And he's writing to his favourite community, full of friends. Make my joy complete. Be of the same mind, having the same love. Because if you have not the same love, you can't have the same mind. If you've not the same mind, you can't have the same love. Being of one soul and one mind, don't do anything from selfish ambition. Don't strive after or seek to find your value in things that are worthless. But in humility, regard others above yourselves. So that not everyone is focused on themselves, but each is looking to the interest of others. Let the same mind be in you. Let me conclude. Sorry for going so long. I'll conclude with a piece of music. Gaze upon the Lord. Or as Michelle took us through beautifully yesterday, gazing upon the Lord, yes. And then there seems to be a further movement of grace whereby the gazing becomes such that we become one. And then we lean back into God's love and become the eyes of Christ and the heart of Christ and the ears of Christ and the embrace of Jesus. So we're not actually looking at him, though we'll keep doing that, please God, and there seems about that. Keep gazing, but allowing the gaze to transform when we're ready into a leaning back and looking at our real world. But now I live no longer I, but Christ lives in me. It's his eyes, etc. So let's enjoy this hymn.